Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It is the debate that never ends. What should be taught in the science classrooms of public school? For decades, Christians lobbied to have creationism included in the school science curriculum. But the Supreme Court ruled that that violated the separation of church and state. And so the theory of evolution remained unchallenged as the best scientific explanation of how life came to be. But Christians are back in the debate now with their own theory. They call it intelligent design. Now, it makes no reference to God or to the Bible, but it does state that the world could never have evolved to the stage we see today without the intervention of some supreme being. And so today we go to Kansas, where a committee of the state school board is holding hearings on just what should be taught in classrooms there. Now, we'd like to hear from you. How should school boards decide what gets taught in science class? Is the idea of intelligent design the perfect compromise between science and religion? Or is it still religion, this time masquerading as science? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're starting the program today with David Klepper. He is a reporter with the Kansas City Star, and he's covering these hearings. David, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Dick.
I thought that Kansas went through this already, first removing evolution from the curriculum and then putting it all back in again. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right. You have a good memory. Back in 1999, we went through this once before. The school board voted in 1999 to remove most mentions of evolution, along with a few other controversial topics like the Big Bang, plate tectonics, things like that. It basically downplayed the teaching of evolution.
And so why are we back at it again?
Well, and you know, this 1999 fight was very similar to this one in that it prompted a lot of media scrutiny around the country and, in fact, around the globe. And a lot of Kansas voters were very displeased that their state was, you know, becoming known as a state of flatlanders. So they promptly removed some of those school board members in 2000. And the new crop of school board members promptly reversed the anti-evolution decision and put evolution back in the classroom. However, encouraged by recent conservative victories here and nationwide, conservatives ran again last year and again took control of the school board. So here we are, part two.
Okay, so where's this likely to lead? Are you expecting another change in the curriculum from this?
Well, these curriculum standards are really just guidelines. Local school districts make up the local standards. These standards, however, serve as sort of de facto standards for many districts, and they're also used in the statewide assessment tests. So we are right now looking at a conservative majority on the school board that seems to be very interested in changing the curriculum once more. The change would allow criticism of evolution, which they say is an unproven theory, as well as change the definition of science itself to say that science no longer must rely on natural causes. And finally, it would allow, though not specifically, the teaching of alternatives like intelligent design.
Okay, so let's assume for the sake of argument that the change goes ahead. As you said, it's up to the local school districts to decide what to do. Does that mean that, you know, in a grade 7 biology class in Topeka next September, the biology teacher could say, you know, class, I'm teaching evolution.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, that could happen. And we've spoken with many science teachers who say that they're not really going to listen because they don't consider what the school board is doing to be legitimate, and they're going to go ahead and teach what they've been teaching. However, there are a lot of districts, primarily smaller rural districts in the western part of the state, that really do rely on these guidelines quite a bit. So if there is a change, it's likely to affect quite a few districts.
Now, David, if I understand it correctly, a few days' hearings last week, another one this week, but scientists have decided not to appear at these hearings, saying that it's not a legitimate debate and the outcome is fixed. Have I got that right?
Well, not quite. There were a number of scientists who appeared on behalf of the proponents of intelligent design.
Okay.
A lot of them had very advanced degrees. However, you are absolutely correct. Scientists who accept the theory of evolution and say that it has as much validity as the atomic theory or plate tectonics or the theory of electricity, they said that this was a sham, a publicity stunt, designed to get the word out on intelligent design, and they said we'll have no part of it.
Okay, good reminder for me not to say scientists on one side and everyone else on the other. David,
when
I think
I learned the hard way.
Thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
David Klepper is a reporter with the Kansas City Star, who is covering the hearings. And I want to go next to Harry McDonald, who is president of an organization called Kansas Citizens for Science. Harry, you were a biology teacher for what, 32 years, I understand?
That's correct.
When you look at the hearings that are underway, were you among those who decided not to appear?
I was, and in fact, as the president of Kansas Citizens for Science, it was our organization that called for the boycott.
Tell me why you made that decision.
Well, Mr. Klepper got it pretty correct. The first thing is that there is no real science controversy, that the proponents of ID are...
That's intelligent design. I just need to...
That's
keep,
right, yeah. Correct. I'm sorry for... but the proponents of ID are fringe science... Or speaking of fringe science at best, if not just plain non-science, and there is no controversy. The second thing is that hosting these hearings was absolutely politically motivated on the part of our board. They even admitted individually at different times, but pretty much collectively a consensus that they weren't going to learn anything from the hearings. In fact, Dr. Abrams, who chaired the committee and is the president of the school board, at the first hearing committee meeting to plan these hearings, gave about a 10-minute speech on how the Board of Education didn't expect to learn any science from these hearings, to which, unbelievably, he let me speak in that meeting. And I asked him, if you don't intend to learn any science, why are we having these meetings? His reply was to inform the citizenry of Kansas. But, of course, the citizenry of Kansas weren't at the hearings. They weren't broadcast, and there was no responsibility of the media to be able to convey word-for-word information. So the whole thing, the political motivation of the board, the fact that there is no science controversy, and our previous experience where we've learned that when creationists, like the board majority is, set the rules for the debate and serve as the judge and jury and executioners in this case, that there's no point in science participating.
I'm still confused on this. You say it's fringe science or non-science, and I don't understand why you wouldn't just show up at the hearings and make your case.
The point is that we've got this kangaroo court, which has already decided what they're going to do. In fact, they've admitted to various press media that, you know, they didn't expect to learn anything that would change their mind. They admitted that technical arguments made on behalf of science were over their head. And what we've learned is that when science participates in staged events like this, it only provides a veneer of credibility. Intelligent design is trying to claim itself to be science, but it doesn't participate in the scientific enterprise except anywhere in their own scheduled kangaroo courts. And we finally decided, well, we're not going to allow them to claim another kangaroo victory. They can have unopposed vote by the board, which the board was going to do anyway, but it's not going to have the credibility of science in support of their decision.
All right. Let's bring Roger DeHart into the conversation here. Roger, you are joining us on the line from Thousand Oaks, California. Now, my understanding is you taught biology for 20 years in the public school system in California, but eventually left in a dispute over just how evolution was being taught. Is that fair?
That's right.
And what were you teaching at the time?
Well, I taught criticisms. In fact, there's a number of things that have been said earlier in the program that are just incorrect. In 1999, the Kansas School Board did not remove evolution from the curriculum, and never has there been a move to remove Darwinian evolution. What there has been is a move to also teach the criticisms, and that's been left out. So I don't know where this information is coming from. But it's typical of the misrepresentation of actually what's going on. And in fact, if you've read the minority report and the proposals, there's nothing in there about removing evolution from the classroom. It's merely about opening up the criticisms and exposing students to the real science.
What do you mean by the real science?
Well, I mean, the accurate representation of science. Textbooks are giving a one-sided view.
Just a second here, Harry. Let's let Roger speak.
And they are also leaving out major problems with origin of life, the Cambrian explosion. You still see pictures of Haeckel's embryos, which show similarity, where they're really misrepresented. And all that the Kansas School Board was wanting to do was to present students with an accurate representation of what was out there in the science.
So what do you say, Roger, to people who say that intelligent design really is religion in science, sort of because creationism couldn't get in there?
Yeah, it's interesting that we get to that topic, and I'm willing to discuss that. But really what the Kansas Board is not wanting to interject intelligent design. They're just saying, if you've read, once again, the minority report, it says that they would like to make a classical distinction between historical science and operational science.
We've got to take a short break in just a couple of moments, Roger. Before we do that, though, is there religion in intelligent design or not?
Well, the elephant in the classroom is the religion of Darwinism. And I'll speak later after the break about intelligent design.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we're trying to figure out how you decide what is taught in the science classroom in America. This is not just a debate that is taking place in Kansas. It is being discussed in South Carolina, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, Ohio, Arkansas, Wisconsin, Kansas, Maryland, Michigan, Tennessee, and Alaska. This is not some isolated incident. We're interested in your thoughts on how science is to be taught in the classroom. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. How should school boards decide what is taught in science class? That is a debating point that goes back decades. We are at it again right now with hearings held by the State School Board of Education in Kansas. But as I mentioned prior to the break, it's also under discussion and under debate in a number of other states. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, Harry McDonald, president of Kansas Citizens for Science. He taught biology for 32 years in Kansas public schools and has been attending those hearings, but decided as a scientist not to testify at these particular hearings. Roger DeHart is joining us from Thousand Oaks, California. He taught public school for 20 years, now teaches biology at Oaks Christian High School in Westlake Village, California. He did testify last week at the Kansas hearings. Roger, I'm going to try one more time on this because I wanted to see if I can get a straight answer. Is intelligent design a way of including religion in science?
Well, I'll certainly give you a straight answer, but once again, I think we need to clarify that's not what Kansas was about. But anyways, in talking about intelligent design, we look for signs of intelligence in many different areas of science. And in fact, the SETI program excuse me, let me finish, please. The SETI program
is trying to save some time
Please let me finish.
Roger, it's a fairly straightforward question about whether or not...
I am, and I'm getting to there. The SETI program is a search for detecting intelligence from outer space. We know that that's not materialistic. It is information. The same thing we find in DNA. DNA is information within the cell. Everybody agrees with that. We look at textbooks.
Roger, you got to help me with an answer to this question. Is intelligent design a way of including religion in science?
No, it's a way of looking at, once again,
all
the possible. It's the inference to the best explanation. It's not about getting religion in science. It's about leveling the playing field. It's about looking at all possible explanations, where right now we can only look for naturalistic explanations.
Okay, Harry McDonald, you're going to disagree with him.
Yes, and the explanation he wants to get in is that God did it. And it's just another God of the Gaps theology, which, you know, if people want to accept, rely on science to prove their religious faith and face the necessity of questioning their faith or denigrating science whenever science fills in the gaps in that knowledge— Roger's free to have that belief. It's a free country, but he's trying to impose a very narrow perspective of God and disguise it as science and call it science, because he admitted in his own testimony.
Okay, well, somewhere in 30 years of teaching biology, Harry, you must have come up against this in your own classroom. How did you deal with it? How did you deal with questions that dealt with religion or philosophy or an understanding of how things came to be?
Well, I relied, in my experience, on instructing kids on exactly what the limits of science were and making it clear from literally the first week of class that science did not offer all the answers there were in the world and did not answer all of the questions there were in the world. And one of the things that science can't answer is ultimate origins and ultimate causes and purpose in the universe. That is just something that science can't investigate. Roger just kind of ignores that. He also ignores...
Wait a second. It's a good point to bring Roger back in here. I'm just wondering, okay, if Harry says science can't offer an explanation of these, Roger, ultimate origin, ultimate causes, why does it have to be dealt with in science class? Why can't it be taught in Sunday school?
Well, because Sunday school teachers don't know the science, and there's lots of science as illustrated by the last 3 days. Those people had PhDs, multiple PhDs, many of them, and they reported on the origin of life science, showing how it's not possible in a naturalistic view, and yet students aren't exposed to that evidence. Darwinian evolution, what's the Minority Report chose to clarify and to define accurately, is an unguided process. That means that it does, once again, have the entailment of
Roger,
some philosophical beliefs.
Are the words unguided in the Majority Report or only in the Minority Report?
Excuse me, but all scientists, Stephen Jay Gould or anybody, knows that the process of Darwinian evolution is natural selection acting on random mutation.
But
anybody
but
knows that random mutation
unguided,
is not a guided process.
So no, we don't know
even
that.
Though it's not there, it's certainly implicit in the word evolution.
Not.
Roger,
it
just
is.
I want to go to our callers here, but I have one set of numbers that I want to run by you here, because in trying to read up on this program prior to this conversation, I came across a statistic that said there are some 500 scientists with these multiple degrees who argue passionately on the side of intelligent design. And about 120,000 scientists with the American Association for the Advancement of Scientists who talk
on Darwinism.
Excuse me?
They doubt the process of Darwinism, not the advocates of intelligent design.
Okay, fair enough. But we're still looking at quite a wild imbalance here between the 500 who want to doubt Darwinism and 120,000 who accept the theory of evolution as the scientific basis to try and figure out where life began.
I don't know if you know my background, but once again, I was removed from my position in the public school for even offering criticisms of Darwinian evolution.
That's not answering his question.
Just a second, Harry.
How long do you think that a person who's a member of these major, like the NAS, the National Academy of Sciences, would last if they held a perspective that was similar to mine? It's certainly not the case that it's a level playing field and science is open, inquiring.
I'm wondering, Harry McDonald, if there is a place in a grade 7 or grade 8 biology class for students to say, right, what else is on the table?
Well, they can ask that within the paradigm of science. The problem is intelligent design is outside of science, and it is absolutely not the place of public school science teachers to allow students to explore their religious beliefs and feel that explains science understanding.
But you know full well that Roger and others are saying it's not religion, it's a different science.
Except that you had the question right. Science has heard what little intelligent design had to offer in the way of evidence and rejected it. There is actually no theory of intelligent design. There is no real research. The things that are being trying to offer in trying to be inserted into the science curriculum in Kansas under the guise of criticisms of evolution have been absolutely rejected overwhelmingly by the science community.
All right, let me stop you there. We have a number of people who want to join us on the phone, and I know There are going to be a lot of unfinished thoughts on the program. I ask for both yours and Roger's forbearance on that. 1-800-423-8255. To Somerville, Massachusetts, Anne's on the line. Hello, Anne.
Hello. I'll keep my comments brief.
Thank you.
Intelligent design can never be science for just one basic reason. Science is about how. It's not about why. Science reveals the process of creation. It can never explain the motivation for it. The why of existence by nature is a religious or philosophical discussion. I believe in intelligent design spiritually, but it doesn't make me reject Darwinism. It doesn't make
And you're saying that you don't want that taught in a science classroom.
Exactly. Have it in the philosophy department.
What about it, Roger?
Well, the argument really is over whether things are designed or not. And based on that criteria, students wouldn't even be able to read a lot of The Origin of Species by Darwin. The arguments, if you can make scientific arguments against design, which Darwin did and many of the proponent scientists today do, then you can certainly make arguments for design, and they're scientific. And my experience in the classroom is that most students, the vast majority of students, want to be taught accurate science, and they want to make the decision for themselves. And none of them get the impression that this is religion being brought in the classroom.
But who's the designer then, Roger?
This is a specious argument.
Roger, who's the designer?
That's not important. I don't have to know that.
But it has to be important, doesn't it? I mean, if you're saying
there are some things that are outside the realm of science, and, you know, everybody on the other side's willing to admit that.
But science doesn't have to answer the question.
Could I step in a second? Even if we were to postulate that there was a designer, that the designer that would have the power to do that would be outside of science, unless science can detect how it was done, which is exactly what that caller was saying. Evolution doesn't say there is no designer, just as she asserted. Evolution simply says this is the pattern that we see that life has followed. And there is no scientific evidence, despite those words that you use. There is no evidence on that.
And if I can come back to you in Somerville, are you saying that kind of question or challenge about who the designer is has no place in a science classroom?
Not in a science classroom, because again, it's about motivation. I don't understand what they mean by design. I think science doesn't reject the fact that design exists in nature. It's just why and who did it. And I think that if these people are really honest, that's what they're really about. And so, fine. So let's have a discussion about it, but not in a lab. Thank you.
And thanks for your call to Rocky Mount, North Carolina, for our next call. Sunny's on the line. Hi, Sunny.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, Dick.
Yeah.
I have agreements and disagreements with both of your guests. My agreement is, first, let me state it this way, that energy in the raw is a destructive force, and the law of entropy tells us that something can't come from nothing, and matter naturally moves towards a greater disarray.
Can you keep this simple for us, Sonny?
Yes, I will. And the next point I have is that we have lots and lots of data that species have evolved over long periods of time. And so the point is that one theory doesn't have to come to the exclusion of the other or taught at the exclusion of the other. However, it just needs to be taught in such a way that the limits of science are clearly defined, because inherent in my years going through school and learning about Darwinian evolution was that there wasn't a creator. It wasn't a stated fact, but it was an assumption that was either drawn by all of the students or inherently taught by the way that the teacher.
Sonny, if I could just interrupt here. I mean, it seems that where we end up with your point and the earlier discussion is, and so what goes into the science curriculum and what should be left in the religion or philosophy or whatever other part of the school curriculum? Are you saying that the design part, Sonny, should be part of the science?
What I'm saying is that we have to accept the limits of what science can tell us. And science, just like your scientific call or your scientific guest has said, science cannot define the absolute origins. It can just define the process to how we got to the point that we're at now. And at the same token, science classroom is not the right place for us to define who did it or why they did it. It's just to give a definition about how it was done. but we cannot give a proper definition about how it was done without acknowledging the fact that it could not be done in the absence of a organizing outside influence.
Roger, your thoughts as you listen to Sonny here.
Well, I agree with almost everything Sonny has said. I mean, really, nobody's saying that we need to know who the designer is or why he did it. Motivation's unimportant here. What we're after is truth. What does the true science say? Motivation should have little to do with it.
If I could interject something there, I think a more accurate portrayal of Sonny's point is that a designer is outside the process of science. What he was calling for, if you go back to his words, is exactly what I said I offered in my classroom, starting out drawing carefully the limits of science, mm-hmm. what science can deal with and what it can't. And that, as I recall, is what Sonny was mentioning. And he was, I think, in agreement with Anne that the supernatural is outside science and doesn't belong in the science classroom.
And the so problem if the is students... intelligence is within the realm of science, detecting whether it's an intelligent or unintelligent force. So by turning it to the supernatural,
but wait a second, detecting if it's intelligent or unintelligent is the same thing that you just said we couldn't do, and that is try to get closer to identifying or understanding the designer. You say hands off on that.
No, I didn't say that at all. I mean, I did say, hands off, we're not detecting the designer. But I didn't say that we can't detect design. I'm saying that we can detect design. And that certainly doesn't
what you don't
who the
know
designer
is whether or not the design has natural origins or there is a pattern which would explain the design. Ultimately, like we said, we'll agree that science can't get to the ultimate cause and the why and the purpose of everything. But what you're calling for is if we don't currently have an explanation for a particular pattern in nature, we're supposed to throw up our hands and say God did it. And that is a vacuous way to approach science. It would never have produced anything that we have today.
Harry, let me stop you. We're going to go to Columbia, South Carolina. Chuck's joining us from there. Chuck?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be up front. I'm an evolutionist. The thing I see is that there are so many creationist stories out there. Every culture has their own creationist stories, and they're all tied to religion, whereas evolution has the continuity through the teachings to everybody. There's no it's scientific. Yes.
Now, are you and your wife in agreement on this one, Chuck?
Oh, no, not at all. My wife is a creationist, i.e., in my mind right now in the U.S., that means Christian. We've discussed it with our children.
Are they in school?
I have a daughter in high school and a daughter in college and in Kansas. And it has come up several times, whereas I feel that it's okay to present the science aspect and my ideas of it. I do it open-mindedly, whereas her creationist standpoint is, you will accept this, and that other is hogwash.
But the bottom line, and one way of trying to sort of set aside all the chaff here, Chuck, is to say, what do you do in the science classroom? What is taught in the science classroom, Chuck? How do you answer that?
I say stick with the continuity. Science of evolution is an ongoing process. And that there's continuity in what they're teaching, whereas back to creationism, there is no continuity. You may have somebody from India that says Ganesh, made man. Somebody from Egypt saying Isis and Horus made man.
Yeah.
You've got somebody from the U.S. saying God made man. The creationist, fine. If you're going to teach it in philosophy, because that's what it is. It's a matter of faith and opinion.
Roger, back to you on this one.
The argument is about design or not design. Darwinian evolution clearly states that things are not designed. There's no purpose. Stephen Jay Gould's famous for the idea of contingency, that if you replayed the tape of life, we'd be lucky to be here. Nothing was planned. Nothing was purpose. If you can make arguments for design, you can make scientific arguments.
But your point is that
design
must be in the science classroom. You're not, as Chuck's suggesting, allowing that to be taught in philosophy, leaving it out of science.
I'm suggesting that we look for all explanations, natural and, once again, if it goes to the intelligent causes, we're willing to go wherever the science and evidence leads.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, let's try and keep it simple if we can. How do you teach science today in public school? Where do you draw the line? Do you stick with, as Chuck said, the evolution and leave all the other ideas in philosophy class? How do you do it? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. How should the school board decide what is taught in science class? We have with us two guests on the program with different views on that. Roger DeHart teaches biology at Oaks Christian High School in Westlake Village, California. He testified at hearings in Kansas, and the point that he's making there is that evolution cannot stand alone as the only thing that children are taught there. He says competing different ideas need to be presented as well. Harry McDonald is with us. He taught biology for 32 years in Kansas public schools. He is president of Kansas Citizens for Science, and it was Harry's decision that the Citizens for Science would not even bother to testify at these hearings because it seems like the people there have already made up their mind that there's going to be a shift in the curriculum in Kansas, as there are shifts in science curriculums taking place right across the country. And that's part of the conversation here, how this plays out in other parts of the United States. 1-800-423-8255 to West End, North Carolina. And Craig's joining us. Hi, Craig.
Hello, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess just a comment, and this is a part, your discussion today is a part and parcel of a much larger dialogue, I suppose, that's going on in the country. This is I feel that this is a very thinly disguised attempt by what I call biblical literalists to hijack major portions of American society and impose a theocracy. This kind of stuff should not be discussed in a science class. What they're talking about should be discussed in a philosophy
class.
Okay,
so now some of that, Craig, that we've covered on the program already, I'm wondering if we can ask you to just go a little bit further in what you're saying, where this is part of a much larger kind of debate that's underway in the country. Are you talking about this as an expression of the culture war, as we understand it?
Yes, I am, I would say.
And do you think that it reflects accurately two different perspectives of the country?
Yeah, I think it does. I really do.
So should we have local school boards thrashing it out, you know, town by town, district by district, where, you know, the parents can weigh in and say, this is what we want, that's what we want? I mean, is that the way to resolve it?
Well, it's the way that, be it good or bad, it's the way that our educational system is designed in this country. It's a local thing. The federal government has no real place in this. And it depends on where you live, in what part of the country, and it really should be decided locally, I think.
I strongly suspect, Craig, that you've sort of put on the table the one thing that Roger and Harry are likely to agree with here, that this is a part of a larger debate that's underway in the country. Harry, I want you to start off on that one for me, if you would.
Well, I do agree with Craig on that, I don't know whether this program needs to focus on that and lose our focus on education and what's the proper way to deal with this in education. But
I think part of understanding where the debate comes from and what the motivation is from both sides is a part of getting to that, isn't it, Harry?
Yes, and maybe I can just add to the pot a little here by saying the letter of protest from the Concerned Scientists of America I don't remember if that's the exact name of the group that was complaining about our current administration's lack of attention to science and failure to follow the advice of scientists in place following just politically motivated inspiration, I suppose speaks to this. And it's really a matter, I mean, to boil it back down to the issue of the science classroom, it's a matter of, do we like what science has done for mankind and specifically for America? Do we appreciate our standard of living and what science has done? And if it's done that, then we actually need to do what the proposition called for in the formal proposition in this hearings in Kansas, and that is the need for students to be able to differentiate science from religious claims made in the name of science. Mm-hmm. And the only way that the ID group, like Roger, can claim that their claims are made in science in the name of science as opposed to religion in the name of science is to redefine science. And interestingly, even when the school board does its dirty deed and redefines science to include the supernatural, that won't change how science is done. It will merely ensure a poor science education for the students of Kansas.
Let me, if I can, though, bring Roger back in here on the larger point of it. Do you agree, Roger, with the point Craig brought to the table, that, that this is in fact a part of a much larger conversation in the country, the between people who are looking at different ways of defining how we teach what the country's founding principles are?
Sure. I think that what parents are concerned about is the idea that everything now in the classroom is limited to a naturalistic view. And a naturalistic view precludes the any possibility that there is a designer. And to just respond to Harry's point, because most working scientists, bent scientists, know that when they practice science in a lab, it has little to do with evolution. All the discoveries in antibiotics and pharmaceuticals and everything else has nothing to do with evolution. And so it's just really a false argument that students somehow will be jeopardized in their science learning and things. My students at Oaks Christian can compete with any of the students in California schools on their SAT or AP exams.
I want to read you, if I can, something from the No Child Left Behind legislation, which popped up in one of the pieces that I was reading. Roger, this is for you. It says, where topics are taught that may generate controversy, bracket, such as biological evolution, close bracket, the curriculum should help students to understand the full range of scientific views that exist. And I saw that and I thought to myself, I was reminded of that when Harry was saying, okay, well, what the intelligent design people have done is said, no, this is science, therefore we get to put it forward as a competing point of view, whereas for most of my lifetime, what we're talking about was creationism, not science.
Well, I'm not going to speak, and I'm not a defender of creationism in public schools. Once again, I get back to the argument that we can detect designs in many other fields of science, and exclude it from the topic of biology is inappropriate if it is the best explanation. And so we have to open up the definition of science and be willing to go where the evidence leads, if there's evidence for it. If there's no evidence for it, then it should fall flat on its face and everybody will see what it is for. But students want to hear that there's a controversy out there. They like learning about it. They like learning the scientific evidences both for and against Darwinism.
I wonder, aren't in part creating the controversy. When you say, oh, no, we got to teach the controversy, aren't you manufacturing it at the same time?
There's many scientists who look at things that are in the textbook and say, wait a second, natural selection acting on random mutation cannot get you what we expect.
I'd say there's about 500 of those people.
Oh, well, that, you know, still if it's a minority, if you're willing to look at the evidence and you can just soundly disprove it rather than boycott a meeting and give the scientific evidence, that'd be great.
You can't disprove it to the majority of scientists. You yourself admitted that there's no mainstream national or international scientific organization that agrees with the criticisms of you and your 500 cohorts.
That's just an appeal from authority.
You know what? We're talking about education. And in the scientific community, we don't use an appeal to authority. We use the results of evidence. But we also use the peer process. And to make your point, you have to produce enough evidence to convince not the lay people, not the science teachers, but you have to convince, and not the people with PhDs who don't research in a particular area. You have to convince your colleagues, and
there were
to the
many
extent that ID has tried that.
There were 23 scientists who testified.
No, they weren't 23 scientists. There were teachers. No, there weren't even 20 scientists.
Okay, let me just stop you there. We're going to get a little lost in an argument over the numbers. I think you're both getting an opportunity
true.
Here to make your point, which is part of what we're doing here. I want to go to Marblehead, Massachusetts, and Consolo is joining us on the line from there. Hi, Consolo. Consuelo, are you there?
Are you talking to me?
I think I am. Have I got your name wrong?
Yeah, I'm calling from Davenport. This is Craig, actually.
Oh, okay. So we had a switch on the line. I'm sorry about that. Craig in Davenport. You're up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my problem I have with intelligent design is it, to me, is another place where the conservative activists are trying to push moderates and liberals in this country around to push their agenda, and it really has nothing to do with science. They basically abuse the language, the theoretical language of theory, and say, okay, theory is just an idea, but a theory is earned. You earn the title of a theory. It's not something that is just given away for free. It's something that has to either be mathematically found in science or in how you're modeling it, or it has to be seen in nature.
So Craig, just if you can, don't talk to me, talk to Roger, and make the case to him that the theory, as you describe it, ought not to be matched up with a bunch of other ideas in a science classroom. How do you make the case to Roger?
Because in science, what you do is you push the ideas that have already been tested in the peer-reviewed journals. So if it hasn't been tested in the journals to begin with to gain theory status, then it's not valid as a theory. It's a hypothesis. It's a model that should be tested, but that doesn't make it theory. It
Roger, let's hear from you here.
It gains theory status because of what has been seen in nature.
You mentioned mathematical, that you want empirical data. List for me what predictions Darwin makes that would be falsified under that theory, and what mathematical, what qualitative and quantitative predictions Darwin makes.
Basically predicts looking at the structures of humans, and then he made this model based on this. Then we find these things in the rock layers in nature. He didn't predict that it would be in the rock layers in nature, so he looks in the rock layers, sees these different layers in nature, and basically as we go further and further back down the rock layers, as we go further into the Earth's crust, we find dinosaurs without human beings in those rock layers. Then after that, we start to find fish that actually have no dinosaurs with them. And then after that, you start to find small microscopic organisms. This is something Darwin predicted, but it
was. Are you familiar with the Cambrian explosion? Do you know of the scientific literature on the Cambrian explosion and Simon Conway Morris's writing on that?
Yes, and why doesn't it get checked in the peer journals as far as that being done first?
Simon Conway Morris.
Not every idea is going to be in high school science classes. It never is. And furthermore, let me add something else about your statement about how it isn't used in biology, sir. The deal is it is used in biology. If you look at Darwin's model from the far past and very far past, then it is a theory because you can't do experimental proofs on it. But when you look at it from the near past, in a 100-year lifetime, I can do evolutionary experiments on biology, and Darwin is always right. He didn't know that Watson and Crick would exist, but it turned out that we did find DNA. You can do these tests in your lifetime. Repeat the experiment.
Craig, let me take a breath here, because I mean, part of the point that Craig is making, Roger, as I understand it, is that in the 150 years that scientists have been working on this theory of evolution, that geology and physics and chemistry and molecular genetics, all those parts of hard, peer-tested science, in fact, do lend weight to something which, and I think Harry will agree with me here, can never be proven, but can only just be made more solid by more evidence.
But once again, my question to the caller and my question to you is, what predictions does Darwinism make where I could absolutely say this is true or this is false? What types of quantitative data is out there so that I can falsify Darwin? One of the main evidences was the idea of junk DNA, that it was just a remnant of our precursors. And what we're finding today now is that no longer does the scientific literature refer to it as junk DNA. We find that it has a purpose, that it appears to be designed. And so the idea of
junk
the Cambrian
DNA
explosion.
Is not
Harry,
a
go ahead,
major,
Harry.
Junk DNA is not used as a major proof. that if there was junk DNA, it might be consistent with that. But finding that there is some function to junk DNA does not at all act as a proof or contrary to Darwinian evolution.
And I agree with you. So I'm asking you, for what predictions do you have that would falsify Darwinism?
All you need to do is actually follow Craig's direction, and that is go into the literature itself and read there, because they make plenty of predictions, and they outline their procedures, and their procedures are peer reviewed. Their data setup is peer reviewed.
I'm asking you,
their
sir,
data
to name
analysis
me one.
Is peer reviewed.
I'm going inter- to interrupt
not,
you here. If you
it's
don't
not
mind.
Necessary for me to do that.
I'm interested, Roger, in a comment from you on the people who say, you know, at a time when this country's having a really, really difficult time competing with other nations in pure science, that if the nation science classrooms go in this direction, it's a step back in time rather than forward.
Once again, I put my students up, or students who are trained, and once again, the learning the criticisms of Darwinism as well as Darwinism, nobody's asking to remove evolution from any of the educational guidelines, but just to teach the full range of explanations and the criticisms. And I think you find students equally well equipped, if not better. And once again, the idea that a person or students cannot compete, that scientists don't, the ones who are working in the lab, in the bench.
Okay, I need to stop
science.
You there, Roger. I want to make space for Harry here.
Sure,
the way it's presented there, Harry.
I would say this. The argument I've been proposing all day is that their claims of evidence against evolution aren't actual claims accepted by the scientific community. In fact, although Roger did not admit it, he did not read all the standards that he was criticizing, the intelligent design movement inserted the terms unguided and purposeless into the Kansas science standards so that they could object to evolution being unguided and purposeless.
And what happens to the science classrooms if the people in favor of intelligent design then have the curriculum change? What happens to those classrooms, Harry?
Well, then first of all, they make an argument which isn't mainstream science, the unguided and purposeless, and then that allows them to introduce arguments against evolution, which aren't arguments against evolution. They're arguments against the terms they inserted into the curriculum, which were unguided and purposeless. It's just like they're trying to insert God because they are trying to change the fully operational definition of science, relying on natural explanations and allowing the supernatural explanation.
I've got to stop you there, and I want to thank both of you for your patience and your determination to make your point. We are going to be spending more time taking a look at this as this issue comes up in more states. Harry McDonald is president of Kansas City for Citizens for Science and a former biology teacher in Kansas. Roger DeHart teaches biology at Oaks Christian High School in Westlake Village, California. We also heard from David Klepper, reporter for the Kansas City Star. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.